Chapter 5. New Friends. "I'd like strawberry jam on my toast," mumbled Cole. He heard a bit of laughter. His eyes felt like they had thick deposits from a generous sandman. As he became more aware of the sounds around him, he realized that he had been begging for strawberry jam in response to a question his mother had asked him. In his dream! It was awkward. None of the voices was clearly recognizable, though one was definitely a girl. She had giggled loudly when he requested jam. In embarrassment, Cole kept his eyes closed for a while and pretended to still be asleep. Part of him wanted to sneak a quick look to see the gathering at his side before formally waking up. However, the sand made peeking altogether impossible. Hearing the voice of a girl jolted Cole's heart into pounding nervously in anticipation. He wasn't exactly slick when it came to introductions and greetings. "Do you think he's waking up?" asked a male voice. It sounded like John, the star baseball player on Cole's team. Just the thought of John being anywhere near him, especially with a girl around, was enough to make him want to disappear. Cole felt a sinking in his stomach. "Well," responded the girl, "I'm not sure if he's with us yet, but he does appear to be hungry." There were a few more giggles. Cole liked the sound of the girl's voice. It was undoubtedly connected to someone similar in age, and by the way she spoke, he imagined she was pretty and popular. It was a familiar voice, enough that Cole racked his brain to place her face. Yet the more he tried, the more he realized how odd things were for him. After all, why was he in bed and with visitors? Cole strained to remember what had happened. His thoughts drifted to the flash flood, then to his mother's lecture, and then to the bizarre dream he had had. None of it placed him in bed, much less near a girl. The whole situation was weird. It led Cole to listen more intently for clues. "How is he doing?" asked a gentle voice. Cole couldn't believe it. He finally recognized someone, and it wasn't one of the people he would have expected. It wasn't even the realm he expected. "Bamboo, you're back," said John. Though it wasn't John, it had to be someone he didn't know. Cole actually felt relief when he realized John hadn't come to make fun of him. "Gramps," chimed the girl. "Did you get the situation handled?" "It's taken care of for now," answered Bamboo. Dodd could hear Bamboo moving closer to the bed. His cane made a familiar thumping sound on the floor, except it echoed more than Dodd remembered. "He should be waking up sometime today," said the girl to Bamboo. "They stopped giving him slurp last night. Higa mentioned he would be hungry when he awoke, and I think she must be right. Everything he said for the past couple of hours has had something to do with food." Dodd was embarrassed by the thought that he had been talking in his sleep in front of other people. It bothered him. But worse than that, he didn't like hearing that he had been previously fed something unusual by the hand of a stranger named Higa. The suspense was unbearable. "Ah," Dodd yawned, stretching both arms up in the air. He moved slowly, acting like he was just becoming conscious. He even made a smacking sound with his mouth, followed by a heavy sigh. They were undeniable signs of someone who was just waking up. Finally, he rubbed the debris from his eyes and blinked. "He's awake," the girl announced excitedly. The way she said it sounded as if she cared. Dodd thought for a second and couldn't remember a time in his life when anyone, so attractive as he anticipated she would be, had said anything to him or about him with such enthusiasm. It took a minute before Dodd could see, partly because the room was so bright. Two walls of windows 20 feet tall lined both long sides of the room. A vaulted ceiling towered up from the windows, at least 30 feet in the middle. It was a massive hall, like the kind kings use when entertaining hundreds of guests. Candle stacks like chandeliers dangled on long chains. Dodd wondered what it would be like to see them lit at night. "How are you feeling?" asked Bamboo, sitting on a chair near Dodd's bed. Dodd's eyes panned downward from the majesty of the barrel-vaulted ceiling to Bamboo's anxious face. "I'm feeling better," he croaked. His throat was dry and scratchy. It made his voice sound embarrassingly ugly. Dodd quickly looked to the side of Bamboo, expecting to see a young girl. A 50-something-year-old portly woman stood by, dressed in a burgundy suit, its buttons bulging, with sharp-tipped collars that stuck straight up in the air. Her hair was short and curly, a bit of a mess, and she had a smudge of something on her cheek. She wasn't terribly attractive, but she smiled sweetly, much like a grandmother would. Dodd searched around the room with his eyes. It appeared to be a hospital of sorts, with partitions sectioning off beds in clumps of four. To his dismay, he couldn't see the beautiful girl he had been imagining. The only other person standing anywhere near him was a large, handsome boy. You take a beating well, said the boy, who sounded like John. His deep voice trailed. It was obviously a polite thing to say. Dodd looked straight at him. The boy may have sounded like John, though that was the end of the comparison. John was short and wiry with straight blonde hair. This fellow, on the other hand, was nothing less than a ladies' magnet. He stood at least 6 feet tall with wavy black hair, bright blue eyes, rippling muscles, and a gentle tan. He looked about 17. The white shirt he wore had a stylish circular collar, and his pants had two-tone coloring around the waist and cuffs. A handsome treader ring circled the base of his neck. It was disappointing to see an older woman stand where the voice had sounded so young. The only consolation Dodd had was that he wouldn't have to watch the girl get goo-goo eyes when talking with the boy. Or at least that's what Dodd thought. He knew what kind of boy most girls liked. While he was awkward with girls when it meant anything, he still had plenty of female acquaintances. And since they were just friends, as the girls often reminded him, they felt no shame in frequently sharing with him the names of the boys they really did like. And the boys weren't exactly coal material. All the girls hoped to date boys like the one standing at his bedside. I'm Boots, said the boy, stretching his right arm out with four fingers apart and his thumb tucked under. One of his fingers displayed a handsome gold ring. Dodd instinctively returned the strange greeting with his own ringless hand. What kind of parents name their kid after a shoe, he thought. This is Higa, pronounced Bamboo, pointing to the lady. She's an old friend of mine. It appears she's done a wonderful job of saving your life. It's good she studied ancient records from the Maj, or I'm certain she wouldn't have been able to see you through. Bamboo looked nervously at Higa and then patted her shoulder, forcing a smile. His eyes returned to Dodd and added, cautiously, I don't think you understand what bad shape you were in, my boy. What's happened to you? Well, it's miraculous indeed that you're alive. And it came with a price, too. Be careful. Dodd felt bad about the trouble and expense he had caused, but hearing the lady's name distracted his attention from whatever Bamboo was trying to say. If she were Higa, there was someone else lurking around, someone he was dying to meet, keeper of the angelic voice to which he had awakened. Oh, thank you, said Dodd emphatically. I appreciate you saving my life, and you did it so quickly. Dodd reached his hand around and felt the hole in his back had completely healed up. The skin even felt smooth and scar-free. He looked at Higa and asked, How long have I been out? About 3 weeks, she responded. Her voice was noticeably that of an older lady. I gave you slurp in your goop to make you sleep. It eased the pain while I attended to your wound. I think you've just about made a full recovery. It's the quickest bounce by far that I've ever seen. She rubbed her hip as though tending an ache, glanced an uneasy peek sideways at Bamboo, and then added, Dodd, you must be made of something more durable than I am. It's your lucky feet, I guess. Dodd smiled as he popped his toes out from under the patchwork quilt he was cloaked in. The tips looked different than usual. Tinged redder. Nothing significant, though. No sooner had Dodd begun to inspect his special feet than Bamboo quickly slid bright blue wool socks onto them, remarking that the hall was cool and he didn't want Dodd to catch his death from a chill after remarkably escaping its grip at the hands of an enemy. 3 weeks, Dodd said. Wow, I should be extremely well rested. He sat up and moved to stand. Here, let me help you, insisted Boot. A big arm wrapped around him under his right arm and up onto his left shoulder. Thanks, said Dodd. He felt bad for feeling jealous of him. Boot appeared to be really nice. Not to mention, the way he looked wasn't entirely his fault. Bamboo spoke with Dodd while Boot helped him up and down the large hall. Dodd's legs felt stiff, but they still appeared more steady than Bamboo's. He struggled with the aid of a cane to keep up. So we brought you here, continued Bamboo. I knew Higa would do a fine job of patching you up. As for your friends, they went on to Highgate. I'm sure you'll be happy to know that the Tri-Blood is safe. Commenda sends a high salute for your bravery and bids you join him at your leisure in his palace at Highgate, or one of his other palaces, if you please. There was a stately manner in which Bamboo relayed the information. Dodd felt like a recovering soldier with respectable rank. He liked being filled in on what had happened during his hibernation. As they strolled, questions began to swirl in Dodd's mind. Fortunately, it was a good time to ask. What exactly happened the night I arrived at your house? Said Dodd, his eyes looking intently at Bamboo for answers. Oh, you mean my hut? I haven't had you visit my home just yet. I intend on bringing you there today. My little stop is here in Lower Janus. It's actually more of a cave, a traveling way station these days. I remember a time when it was more than that. I must have been barely 60 or so. The grip of fear was heavy. Almost everyone had to hide from the reign of Doss. Only the Maj seemed unaffected. They always had a better way, even though people feared them. Of course, going to Sush at all back then was, well, like swimming to the bottom reaches of the sea. Few dared venture through Susha's wilderness and nomadic chaos to the cities of the Maj, so most folks knew very little of them, except, of course, what they heard in mystical legends. Yes, those were the days. I hid for years in that small thing, directing my men's efforts. We fought hard against Doss until he was finally defeated. Boot was listening more eagerly than Dodd, who found himself distracted because Bamboo hadn't addressed his original question. "Do you think we'll ever see the likes of another swapper like that?" asked Boot. Just mentioning the word swapper suddenly piqued Dodd's interest. He had heard the title used when referring to some benevolent person or thing that mentored people for good causes. Hearing the word used now, in the context of a villain, didn't seem to fit Bowler's descriptions of a swapper. "No, I hope not in a million years," responded Bamboo with a loud sigh. He slowed down and took a seat near the windows. It looked as if his thoughts weighed upon him heavily. Boot followed quickly, plopping himself next to Bamboo with enough vigor to almost send Dodd flying to the floor. Fortunately, he swung around and steadied Dodd with an equal zeal, helping him sit at his side. "To think that such a thing could happen makes me concerned," confessed Bamboo. He looked past Boot, right at Dodd, and said sadly, "I carry a heavy burden for a treader." His eyes filled with emotion, and he added, "There are some things that are better not shared, but there are other things that are even worse." Dodd wondered what Bamboo meant. It was like a riddle of great importance, something he was to understand. Nevertheless, the silence only lasted a few moments before Boot wanted to know more. "What exactly happened to the Maj?" Bamboo shifted in his seat, just enough to capture sunlight on his head. He had been shadowed before, but with light streaming through the window against his back, it seemed as though he took center stage. "They were a great people," he whispered reverently. "Probably the best people we have ever seen in these realms. They lived in peace despite the turbulent atmosphere of Sush. It is said they invented the doors between Sush, Rahl, and Green. When my parents sought their help as ambassadors, they freely shared their knowledge with us. They provided the triblots that still continue to protect a few of our cities, triblots they originally invented to stop raiding nomads who attacked them from time to time. Not to save the Maj. They could have killed the nomads without a problem. When they put up the triblot barriers, they did it to spare the nomads from being destroyed by them in battle." Bamboo spoke with emotion. He wiped a tear from the corner of his eye and then continued, "They even gave us the knowledge and ability to destroy Doss. Doubtless, that was the reason they died. I've heard people say that the Maj scientists created the Hiccupsy as a weapon, which foolishly led to their own demise. But it's a lie." Across the way, someone dropped a metal object that echoed rhythmically. Everyone in the hall looked toward the commotion. That is, everyone except Dodd and Boot. They persisted in listening intently to Bamboo. "The Maj fell prey to the Hiccupsy. That part is true. However, we still don't know exactly what it is or how it happens. Apparently, despite the Maj's medical technology and longevity, they couldn't stop it. They all became sick and died within a few weeks. That was right before we destroyed Doss. He knew they were helping us, so he spitefully killed them all. Genocide! Hoping to prevent our success." Bamboo shook his head. He felt some measure of guilt about their deaths. They had died helping him fight Doss. "Since then," he continued, "others have gone back to search their cities for treasures and knowledge. Few return, and those who do eventually die from the sickness. It's as if the air around their cities is contaminated with the disease. Doss had a cruel hand in it, I can tell you that much." "Ah," said Boot, "is it true that your parents also died from the Hiccupsy? If you don't mind me asking." "I've heard it told a few different ways." Boot leaned in so close to Bamboo that he almost completely blocked Dodd's view of him, and fearing that Bamboo would whisper, Dodd shifted to his other side. "Probably," came the response. "I can't say. My parents were friends with the Maj, so when they all died, my parents went back to compile some of their writings to preserve their legacy of technology. It was the last tribute my parents could give them. Unfortunately, my parents were only able to write a meager sampling before they returned to Green and died. But Dodd, you can thank them for your life. The technology used in saving you came from my parents. That part's true, Higa agreed, startling Bamboo. She'd come over in search of her patient. Without Bamboo's parents, you wouldn't be Pinky, would you? Higa crinkled her face as she spoke, almost mockingly, while Bamboo looked at the floor and sighed. I'm sure we'd have buried you, Higa continued, grumbling. We'd have thrown your body gray and stiff in the ground with the rest of Dredarius's victims if it weren't for his parents. Higa pointed at Bamboo. Thank you, Bamboo, and Higa, said Dodd. He really appreciated how much better he was feeling than just 3 weeks before, and regretted the trouble he had caused. He nearly felt like himself again. You're welcome, responded Bamboo. And thank you, Higa. We're all indebted to you. He smiled politely until she walked away. Dodd, Bamboo added, looking squarely at him. I'm glad you're helping us keep the legacy of freedom my parents gave their lives for. You're special, and tough times call for special people. Bamboo said it with a twinkle in his eye that left Dodd wondering how much Bamboo knew about everything going on. He seemed to be full of answers, the kind of answers Dodd had been searching for. Do you think I'm being helped by a swapper mentor? Asked Dodd. It was one of the many questions swirling around in his head. Boot laughed out loud on the other side of Bamboo and mumbled while shaking his head, If you don't know, you're not. Bamboo's response was much gentler. I think there are a lot of things going on with you right now, he assured. Things we should discuss later. He pointed across the room to where Dodd's bed was and added, Delia's getting impatient over there. It looks like she has our lunch ready. Had any other line been used to keep him from getting straight answers, Dodd would have been dreadfully disappointed. But seeing Dilly changed his mind completely. He quickly agreed with Bamboo that they could save the conversation for later. Even from the distance, Dilly was beautiful. Her long brown hair had waves and curls which reminded him of a princess in a childhood bedtime story. Boot reached down and tried to help Dodd walk. No thanks, he responded. My legs are feeling a lot better now. In truth, Dodd struggled. He would have allowed Boot to help him, yet he didn't because he hoped by walking on his own, he would make a better impression on Dilly. His eyes carefully watched her. He wanted to know more about her without letting her know he was noticing, so he guarded every glance cautiously. Dilly wore an outfit that merged a traditional royal dress with pants as he had never seen done before. It was truly original. A ruffled white top was interrupted nicely by pink leather lacing across her torso. From her shoulders, and what appeared to be slight padding on top, a creamy pink cape trailed down her back, with pearl strands dangling and woven artistically. The cape was attached loosely to a secondary feature that was connected firmly to her waist in the back only. Multiple layers of white lace and ruffle padding were added to the lower rear element, which trailed to nearly the floor. In the front, shiny pink leather pantaloons came to just below her knees, where they were met by white ruffled stockings. She also wore bluish-gray boots that came just above her ankles, topped off with gold buckles. Usually, Cole did poorly with greeting beautiful girls. Somehow, this time he felt different, like that part of him had been left in the past. Think like a man, be a man, thought Dodd. I just have to believe it. After all, if this is a dream, it's my dream. And if it's not, these people don't need to know I'm hopeless. It sounded perfect in his mind. Bamboo introduced Dilly as his great-granddaughter and then added that she was called great for more than one reason. Dodd fumbled for the words to appropriately say hello. How do you do, he said. It was awkward. Close up, she was cuter than he had imagined. Never had he seen anyone with such exciting brown eyes. In an instant, she drew him in. Very little of his brain was left to concentrate on speaking. Dodd blushed bright red and tried to recover by saying, I mean, I'm glad to eat you. The words blurped out horribly wrong. Where do fumbles like that come from anyway, he thought, shaking his head in embarrassment. Fortunately, Dodd was hungry from 3 weeks of being force-fed goop while unconscious, and Dilly knew it. Well, don't eat me, she chuckled. Try this instead. She presented him with a slice of toast smothered in strawberry jam. I hear it's your favorite, she continued gleefully. Dodd looked in her eyes and knew that she was being sincere. Thank you, he squeaked. It was two simple words, and spoken poorly at that, yet it seemed to be all he was capable of saying at the moment. So much for suave Dodd. Boot was amused watching Dodd fumble around. When Dilly left to get more juice, he gave Dodd some feedback, his elbow and a big smile. "She's really something, isn't she?" he said teasingly. Dodd nodded his head in unison with Bamboo. "I think 51 years has been kind to her," remarked Bamboo. "You can see she is on her way to becoming a woman, and as a Kusing, she's following right in her mother's footsteps." It was amazing. Dilly didn't look a day older than 15, maybe a mature 15. Dodd stared in silence. Memories flashed of the Treader people. They grew in spurts, one at about 12 and another in their 50s or early 60s. That's why most didn't marry until sometime well after 60. "How old are you?" asked Dodd, looking at Boot. "A lot older than you," he responded with a grin. "I'm 57, and you're a human, so I take it you can't be any older than 35. Dodd liked the thought of Boot calling him 35. He couldn't tell whether Boot was serious or not. Regardless, he went along with it anyway. "You're good, Boot. That's pretty close." Dodd found himself quickly becoming friends with Boot. It didn't take much effort. It was as if they'd been tight for a long time. The age gap seemed insignificant. Dodd saw Boot as a peer, and Boot played the part well. It was common for Treaders in their 20s through 50s to have human friends in their teens. They looked and acted alike. Treaders and humans were basically the same, with Treaders having an extended youth and middle age. Though older, Treaders had a juvenile spirit that matched their younger human counterparts. It could be difficult to tell 15-year-old humans from 50-something-year-old Treaders, so long as they were in social settings and wearing clothes that concealed their lower necks. Of course, in working situations, Treaders had abilities which revealed their true age. Bamboo led the group at a leisurely pace out of the hospital. His cane thumped a rhythm which mirrored their steps. It would have taken forever if they had walked to Bamboo's house, but fortunately, transportation was waiting. The ride was a horse-drawn carriage of sorts, a plush 12-seater. "Please, everyone, make yourself comfortable," proclaimed Bamboo, pointing at the open door with his cane. "There's plenty of room today. It takes about 3 hours from here to get to my home, so find a soft spot and enjoy the ride." Dodd and Boot quickly climbed inside, followed by Bamboo, who first stopped to say something to the driver. The only way it could have been nicer was if Dilly would have decided to join them. Nevertheless, since she insisted on riding her black horse, Song, it wasn't an option. Bamboo tried to convince her otherwise, suggesting that Song could trot behind the carriage, to which Dilly laughed and replied that her horse was born to run, not trot. With just three in the carriage, they rattled around with ample space to lie down if they chose. Bamboo took a nap, so Dodd spent his afternoon mostly listening to Boot tell of adventures. He spoke frequently about the Kusings, of which he was a member. It was one of those things that Dodd was expected to know plenty about, but didn't. The name sounded familiar, like memories of the bunch were trying to step forward from the back recesses of his mind, just temporarily detained. Occasionally, Boot included a question or two. Dodd didn't want to look dumb in front of Boot, so he usually nodded and played like he understood. Dodd enjoyed listening to Boot's ramblings, which made the ride easily better than the best of moments he had had while traveling with Bowler, Tritacello, and Dungo. Though, in all fairness, sitting comfortably and pain-free, while smelling freshly bathed and wearing clean clothes, didn't hurt the ambience either. Not to mention, it was more than advantageous that he didn't need to worry about Dungo's flatulency and its tremendous capacity to befoul any circumstance, which certainly had rendered the other traveling episode a worst-ever incident. Suddenly, right in the middle of Boot's stories, mysterious images, somewhat convoluted, flashed into Dodd's mind. They were of a hand with a jagged scar on the back, working a metal tool against leather riggings. The scene was unusual considering Boot's current tale had nothing to do with leather riggings or scarred hands. As a matter of fact, Dodd would have preferred that it had, for he found Boot's descriptions of his pursuits after young ladies bordering on scandalous, which bothered him with Dilly on his mind. Another string of images burst forward. This time, the scarred hand twisted back and forth, struggling to loosen a bolt or adjust a metal clip. The glimpses made Dodd shiver. Somewhere, sometime, this wicked hand meant to harm him. He knew it. Dodd would have dismissed the thoughts as mere figments of his imagination if it hadn't been for the other unusual experiences he had already encountered while in Green. Just then, the carriage stopped abruptly. Dodd looked through his open window and saw no sign of a dwelling nearby. Panic struck his heart. It showed on his face, causing Boot to laugh at him and say, Haven't you ever taken a walk with a girl? Dodd nodded to the question without hearing it. His mind was busy thinking about what neither of them could see. Zerny, who was a hired draft for Bamboo and his family, insisted that Dodd get out and walk near the tip of a lookout to peek at the view. Dodd wasn't sure if he dared. After the things he'd just seen in his mind, he was ready to run. Everyone looked suspicious, especially Zerny. He had an uppity nose, pointed beard, and beady dark eyes. His wispy snow-white hair blew in the wind, revealing he was balding on top. His mannerism suggested he was impatient. Cautiously, Dodd made his way to the edge, staying behind Zerny all the way. However, he only dared do it after Boot teased him relentlessly, insisting that if he hadn't seen the view before, he had to see it now. It was impressive. Zerny knew how to pick scenic spots. He even bragged a bit that he knew every good angle in Green, having traveled the world over at Bamboo's side. The outcome made Dodd feel embarrassed about the way he had acted. He especially regretted having given Zerny such condemning looks when Zerny had only been trying to be a good host. On the way back to the carriage, Dodd tried to make a better second impression, since he had clearly ruined the first. "Do you enjoy working for Bamboo?" he asked sheepishly. The man surprised him with his response. "Oh, he's a lot more than just a job," sputtered Zerny. His speech was choppy. "Well, we've been friends all of my life. Our families are practically blood." Zerny went on to stutter through an explanation of how he and his family were shorter than most drats, but since Bamboo is small for a treader, they were made for each other. Zerny stood about 5 feet. He was barrel-chested and strong. His white beard and unusual nose showed a clean line of drat blood, despite being nearly a foot shorter than the average 6-foot man among drats. Yet he did have a point about Bamboo. 5.5 feet was below the norm for a grown treader with noble blood. Zerny continued, "Well, we joke that being short makes us live longer. Bamboo is the oldest treader by a long shot. 333. Zerny smiled. His face beamed with loyalty and friendship. "Do you mind if I join you up front?" asked Dodd when they arrived back at the wagon. "Be my guest," responded Zerny. Boot grinned a have-fun kind of look through the window of the carriage and quickly joined Bamboo in napping. It wasn't long before Zerny pointed out the house. It was hardly a house. Calling it an estate seemed to underplay its grandeur. In the distance, a few miles down a steep hill, past fields and forests, there was a city of buildings and gardens surrounding a massive structure in the center. The complex was positioned on the borders of an enormous lake, extending across most of the horizon. "There it is," stuttered Zerny, his finger pointing at the cluster of buildings. "Which one is Bamboo's?" asked Dodd. Zerny laughed. "They're all his. Everything you can see from here to the Lake Modge is his, and the lake is his, too." "And these fields of grain?" marveled Dodd. "All his." "Then who are those people down there, the ones by the homes near the forests? Who are they?" "Some family, but mostly friends. Guess at Twistyard." Zerny, noting Dodd's ignorance, went on to explain that Bamboo's parents had been the wealthiest and highest-ranking nobles among the Treader people. Their kingdom had been massive, accounting for a majority of the lands in many civilized communities. Out of kindness, they had set up a government where the people ruled, patterning it after the systems they had studied while visiting the Modge. Despite opposition from other ruling Treader lines, Bamboo's parents had given up most of their wealth, endowing the working class with opportunities, and consequently had persuaded the nobles to do likewise. Bamboo's parents had started a revolution. Humans, treaders, drats, bobwits, and the like had all joined in seeking a unified freedom. Zerny continued, adding that things were very different because of them, and that the stable government and lack of oppression was largely due to their efforts. "Well, what Bamboo now has," concluded Zerny, "is less than a speck compared to what he could have had as their only child. He continues their legacy of kindness by doing good things with his stewardship." Dodd turned around and looked through a small window into the carriage where Bamboo slept. What a heritage, he thought. The calm moment of respect didn't last long, though. As the carriage lunged down the steepest part of the journey, something went bump.